This program contains strong adult language and may rip the blinders straight off your head. Listener discretion is advised.
Barack Obama, what are your thoughts on the Declaration of Constitution?
You know, I think it's a remarkable document. The original Constitution, as well as the Civil War amendments, but I think it is an imperfect document.
Section 1021 essentially codifies into law the very dubious claim of presidential authority under 2001 authorization for the use of military force to indefinitely detain American citizens without access to legal representation or due process of law.
Hello, I'm Congressman Charlie Dent. I'm proud to be the sponsor of the Bipartisan Enemy Expatriation Act.
No right to attorney, no right to trial, no day in court.
The bipartisan legislation I introduced this week calls for a pragmatic recognition that a person who is purposefully and materially supporting acts of terror against the United States is demonstrating that they have no intent in acting as a U.S. citizen.
When they say, I want a lawyer, you tell them, shut up. You don't get a lawyer. 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 You don't get a
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2 of Don't Listen to This Show. Thanks for tuning in. Now I have just one question for all of you. Are you ready to wake up yet? Because I'm ready to wake your asses up right here, right now. We've got a great show here for you. We're going to break down 3 things. We're going to break down the Patriot Act, first of all, that little gem that determines who is considered a domestic terrorist. And you may be surprised to find that you might actually be on that list. I'm sure that I am. The next thing we'll talk about is the NDAA briefly, National Defense Authorization Act. We're going to be doing this briefly because, quite simply, my first episode, the one right before this one, went into detail about the NDAA. If you don't know much about it, stop this one. Go back to the first one. Listen to that show, get informed about the NDAA, and then come, you'll be ready for this show at this time. The third thing we're going to be talking about is a little gem that I found called H.R. 3166. It's due to be voted on this month, January 2013, at some point by Congress. The Enemy Expatriation Act, the House as well is going to have a hearing on this. This guy basically adds in that people will be expatriated, which means your nationality to the United States of America is going to be null and void under this Enemy Expatriation Act. So an American citizen can actually have their nationality removed. You will no longer be a citizen of the USA. And then in our final segment, our special guest is going to be Mr. Travis Wilson at Patriot Papers on Twitter. Check him out. It's going to be great. Are you ready? I'm ready. Let's get those blinders ripped straight off your frickin' face. Bring that shit in. So first of all, we have the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act obviously is full of a lot of stuff that nobody cares about. It's all financial things and budget things and allowances here, allowances there. It's a lot of pages of stuff, just like the NDAA is, where only a very small portion of the Patriot Act is really of concern to anybody outside of the government and people that want finances to do whatever. The section that I'm wanting to focus on here is the association with terrorist organizations. This is where they talk about how they define a terrorist or a terrorist organization. And it says specifically, any alien who, and I want to kind of define how they're using the word alien in here. They're not talking about ET, they're not talking about Martians or anything like that. They're talking about a foreign national to the United States. So somebody who is not a citizen of the U.S. An easy way to explain this would be an illegal alien, a term that we've all heard many times. An illegal alien, obviously, is someone who lives in the United States illegally. So they don't have nationality here, they don't have citizenship, they're just here. So any alien who the Secretary of State, after consultation with the Attorney General, or vice versa, determines has been associated with the terrorist organization and intends, while in the United States, to engage solely, principally, or incidentally in activities that could endanger the welfare, safety, or security of the United States. So in other words, any non-U.S. national who is engaged in anything that could endanger the welfare, safety, or security of the USA falls into this category. You know, later they talk about deporting these individuals. If an American national is stripped of his or her nationality, where they talk about this in the proposed act of Enemy Expatriation Act, if an American national is stripped of their nationality, where would they be deported to? Where do ex-nationals go when they're thrown out of the country? It raises a big question there for myself. But in this section also, we have the definition of what they consider to be a domestic terrorist. It has multiple definitions, multiple scenarios of how someone can be labeled a domestic terrorist. I want to read this off to you because it's very interesting, very concerning, if you will, for people like myself. So basically, it means activities that involve acts dangerous to human life that are in violation of the criminal laws of the United States or of any state. So this little part here is talking about any criminal act that endangers human life. And that could mean even your own human life. If you're a suicide bomber and you're strapping on the TNT, you don't even have to do anything at this point. You're endangering your own life, so you are a domestic terrorist. And this also involves gun crime. Frankly, we have this whole Second Amendment thing going on right now where they're trying to put gun bans or just get rid of the Second Amendment altogether and take away all our guns or put strict controls on what kind of guns we can own. And they might actually say, well, any gun criminal or gun owner is a potential domestic terrorist. So that's kind of concerning. It also means that you appear to intend to coerce a civilian population. Now, what could that possibly mean? To me, it says that if you go outside your house with a bullhorn and you get up on your soapbox in town square somewhere and you start rattling off all this stuff about trying to spread truth and get people to wake up and you're naming off all the bad things about what the government's doing, hey, guess what? You're a domestic terrorist now. It also means that you're trying to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. I can explain this very simply. You try to intimidate a government official to do what you want on a specific policy, or you simply try to coerce them. And you have to understand what coercion is. Coercion is simply walking up to somebody and talking to them and trying to convince them to agree with your side of whatever the opinion is, whatever the topic is. So you just walk up to a state official or a government official and you say, hey, you know, I don't like such and such policy. I'd really like you to do something about that, revoke it. Hey, you're a domestic terrorist now. Congratulations. It also means that you're trying to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. Now this one makes sense to me. Trying to blow up buildings or blow up a train station, mass destruction. you assassinate somebody, you shoot them in the head with a sniper rifle, or kidnapping, that makes sense to me to be a domestic terrorist. That one is yeah, that's fine. I agree with that. And all of these things must occur primarily within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States to be considered domestic. That makes sense too. But the first three quarters of this, really concerning. Now, Senators Ron Wyden and Mark Udall, Wyden, a Democrat out of Oregon, and Udall, a Democrat out of Colorado, stated, quote, "We would also note that in recent months we have grown increasingly skeptical about the actual value of the intelligence collection operation. This has come as a surprise to us, as we were initially inclined to take the executive branch's assertions about the importance of this operation at face value." And they go on to state that U.S. citizens would be, quote, "shocked to learn what sorts of liberties the government is taking with their civil rights in respect to this section, Section 215 of the Patriot Act." Now, Section 215, in a nutshell, says that if the FBI wishes to obtain information regarding any individual pertaining to what they deem international terrorism or clandestine intelligence activities, so long as the reasons aren't solely because of what the person speaks, in other words, if it's something protected by the First Amendment only, they cannot pursue the investigation. But pretty much anything else is up for grabs. It also states that an order under this subsection, such as the FBI gaining access to someone's personal information, and this section itself defines the personal information as including books, records, papers, documents, and other items, which could be anything, shall not be disclosed as being issued for the purposes of an investigation. In other words, it will be kept secret, and only people who have a need to know will know about it. So what does all this mean anyway? Well, it's pretty bad, obviously, to be labeled a domestic terrorist. If you're a gun owner, if you've committed any crime activities which endanger human life, which is every crime activity basically, if you are an activist, a political activist, if you have supported Ron Paul in his recent presidency runs, guess what? You have joined the ranks of being a domestic terrorist, just like myself. I'm proud to say, actually, that I am a domestic terrorist, because in the nation of lies, truth is treason. And I'll be treasonous until I die or am killed in this nation of lies. I can't put up with it any longer. Hopefully you can't as well. If your blinders are starting to loosen a little bit, we're getting through to you. If not, keep listening in. We're going to put all these puzzle pieces together and lay them out for you, so it's clear to see, and anybody can see exactly what we're talking about, how these things fit perfectly together. Keep tuned in. So now we're going to be briefly touching on the NDAA, and when I say briefly touching, I sincerely mean that, because in my debut podcast of Don't Listen to This Show, the very last one I did a whole segment on the NDAA, what it means, broke it down, gave my thoughts on it, and during the interview segment, touched on it even again with my special guest Malone Labbé, where I reluctantly admitted that there is a loophole in there, which is mildly concerning. But since I've learned about the Enemy Expatriation Act and revisited the Patriot Act and looked at the NDAA one more time, personally, what used to be mild concern has turned into full-out extreme concern over how these three things can work together to literally destroy an American citizen's life. So we're going to briefly touch on this, and if you haven't listened to the original podcast, go back and do that now. It's very informative. It's going to give you all the information you need to know about the NDAA, and a lot more other stuff too. So check it out. Come back and revisit this one after that. So the NDAA, basically the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012 and 2013, there's a couple segments in there. 2021 and 2022 sections of the NDAA 2012 were the concerning points for a lot of people. And in a nutshell, the NDAA of 2012 says that a person who was a part of or substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces that are engaged in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners, including any person who has committed a belligerent act or has directly supported such hostilities in aid of such enemy forces. And it goes on to explain that detention under the law of war without trial until the end of the hostilities authorized by the authorization for use of military force. This is the indefinite detention portion. And then the section where I made my argument that this is not a threat to the regular citizens of the U.S. And I still kind of hold that view. The average sheeple of the United States are not going to be affected by this, but people like myself, others like myself, who are activists and are speaking out against this, I believe are now at supreme threat when you combine these three things together that we're talking about. But this section here that is supposed to protect the American citizen says, nothing in this section shall be construed to affect existing law or authorities relating to the detention of United States citizens, lawful resident aliens of the United States, or any other persons who are captured or arrested in the United States. So now I'm going to play a little clip for you guys. This is a recent interview that Obama gave to Ben Swan about the NDAA itself. And Ben Swan was raising a very good question as to if the president realizes that this is such a concern for U.S. citizens, the Section 1021 and 1022 of the National Defense Authorization Act, why are they pressing so hard to get rid of the section that protects U.S. citizens? And this was Obama's response.
Well, look, the basic principle here is, number one, my first job is to keep the American people safe. Number two, we've got to do it in a way that respects our values and our traditions and rule of law. That's why I ban torture. That's why I've argued that we should actually close Guantanamo. But I've also said that, you know, we've got some bad guys who are down there who we may not be able to try in a traditional court, but have pledged to try to hurt Americans. And so that's something that we inherited, that we're dealing with, and it's complicated. On the other hand, what I also said was a U.S. citizen can never be subject to that kind of detention. Congress disagreed with me, and I didn't want us to not be able to finance our military and pay our soldiers and our troops. So I signed the bill, but what I also said was, look, that I'm never going to use this power, and you know, what I suspect is that the courts are going to agree with us over the long term that that is not something that you can use when it comes to U.S. citizens.
So after listening to that clip, there's a couple of three things that I find rather disconcerting about his response. The first and foremost thing within the first 10 seconds of his response, he says his first job as president is to protect the American people. This is incorrect. The first job of the President of the United States is to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. That is his first duty. That is in his oath of office. That is the only thing in his oath of office that he has to protect. Obviously, if somebody is attacking the United States of America, our military is going to respond. That's not the president's job. It's the president's duty to do so. His job is to uphold the Constitution. The second thing is, he says, well, you know, I wanted to make sure our military was going to get paid, so I signed the bill. But I also said that I wasn't going to use this power to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens. Well, if he's not going to use it, who is? Is his predecessor? Are we setting up the next president to be able to use this power? It's there. It's available. And they haven't taken it away. In fact, they're fighting to make sure that U.S. citizens can't be protected under this anymore. They're fighting to remove the clause, subsection E, which states that U.S. citizens cannot be affected by anything here. But can we even believe Obama what he says anymore? I think not. For first of all, I don't think we can believe a word that comes out of his friggin' mouth. Second of all, if he doesn't use it, if he's being honest about this one thing, this one little thing in his whole 8-year term that he's going to run through, if this is the only thing he's honest about, that's good, but it's still there. It still can be used at a later time by a later president. Who is this setting it up for? Who's the NWO got on their roster coming up after Obama that's going to utilize this to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens? That's the biggest question. Are your blinders shaken off yet? Are your blinders falling off your head? Maybe one's hanging there by a thread on one side. The other one's still attached, but at least I think we're getting through to you, maybe. Hopefully so. Now we're going to move on with the show. Please stay tuned. We're going to have a little break here. We'll talk about the Enemy Expatriation Act. Alright, so now we're going to move on to this new little gem I found. It is H.R. 3166, the Enemy Expatriation Act, which is going to have its vote coming up January of 2013, which is right now. And this little beauty states that it wants to add engaging in or supporting hostilities against the United States to the list of acts for which United States nationals would lose their nationality, and also defines for purposes of this section, the term hostilities means any conflict subject to the laws of war. Now that's very interesting. What does that mean? Well, any conflict subject to the laws of war would be a wartime conflict. Who are we at war with right now? We're at war with terrorists. And terrorism, the war on terror that we've heard so much about over these last 11 years. And basically that means that if anyone who is a U.S. national is engaged in terrorist activities, they would lose their nationality. So they would no longer retain citizenship in the United States of America. Wow. I don't think I have to explain how this all ties in at this point. If you've listened to the program to this point, I'm pretty sure even a sheeple with their blinders firmly attached would understand what in the hell is going on here. Now, there are three names I'm going to give you. These guys are co-sponsors of this bill. They want it to go through. They wrote it. They support it. First name is Jason Altmaier. He's a Democrat out of Pennsylvania. Second name is Robert Latta, Republican out of Ohio. And the third name is Frank Wolf, Republican out of Virginia. So those three names are on my shit list right now for various reasons. Let's just be realistic here. If under the Patriot Act, you are deemed a domestic terrorist, through which the National Defense Authorization Act allows you to be indefinitely detained until the cessation of hostilities, which would be the end of the war on terror, which I think is pretty clear is never, ever going to come to an end, ever. Now the Enemy Expatriation Act kicks in and they say, well, guess what? Your citizenship is revoked. You are no longer a U.S. national. Oh, now all of the foreign national terrorist things apply to you. And you can now be deported to where? I don't know. Maybe a FEMA camp somewhere. It'd be real interesting to find out if all the FEMA camp locations are on soil that is considered not a part of the United States of America. Much like Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia is not a part of the United States of America. It is not a state. So, what does this mean? I think it's clear. I think these three things are meant to work together. If this Enemy Expatriation Act passes, well, let's just say we're all in a deep load of shit. And there's really no getting out of it. They can just point the finger and you're screwed. So I guess that's pretty much it. I mean, this bill is very short. The Enemy Expatriation Act is very, very short. Not so sweet. Straight to the point. So let's move right along and get on with the program. So now we're going to move along to our interview section with my special guest, Travis Wilson, at Patriot Papers on Twitter. How you doing, man? Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. So obviously I got you on here to talk about what's going on with the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, the Enemy Expatriation Act that I, you know, just found out about recently. I understand that you have a whole plethora of other things that fit right into this.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of research, and I kind of started out with the NDAA, and, after that, you kind of, I guess, naturally, not really progress, but regress into the Patriot Act, which happened after 9/11, 2001. But it also, it goes a lot farther back than that. Really, the government being able to limit you or to be able to limit what you say and do and have the punishment for doing that. It really, it honestly, and everything that I've looked at has kind of gone back to the Alien Act and the Sedition Act of 1798. I don't know if you know anything about those, but they were signed under John Adams. The Alien Act made it to where the president can judge who is dangerous to the peace and safety of the United States or who has reasonable grounds to suspect of a treasonable or secretive plan against the government. And so they can actually determine who they want to say is an enemy. They call it the Alien Act. That would basically make you an alien to the government.
Wow, so that's... That literally goes right along with all this stuff. Yeah, that sounds really familiar. It's just really old.
Yeah. And then the Sedition Act kind of took it to the next level, and they said that anyone who writes, utters, or publishes, or causes it, assisted in any way, basically the media, if they kind of help along these people with any kind of false information, scandalous information, anything that goes against the story, the official story of the government, they can be imprisoned from 6 months to 5 years, and you have a fine not exceeding $5,000.
Wow.
That's kind of where I've taken the beginning of everything, because that's kind of where it kind of all started. They can say who is and who isn't an enemy of the state.
Yeah, so that's obviously against the First Amendment right there, and that was how long ago?
That was in 1798.
Wow. So this has been going on forever.
Yeah, and Jefferson really despised the law, but when he took office, he had a few people that were basically saying stuff about him. He had them in prison for 6 to 8 months each. There were multiple arrests under these two laws, and there was a lot of fines and a lot of jail time for these individuals. So it's not like something they just made up and then didn't use. They actually used it multiple times.
And that's kind of frightening to me, because a little bit earlier in the show I talked about the NDAA, and I played a little clip where Obama was interviewed by Ben Swan about the NDAA, the kill list and Syria, everything. But on the NDAA specifically, Obama's response to the question of, if you know that we're concerned about this, why are you pushing to remove the protection in subsection E of the 1021 section that protects U.S. citizens from this? And his response basically was that, well, I wanted to make sure our military got paid, so I signed the bill, but I did make sure everybody knew that I would never use this power myself. But yeah. Come on. If he doesn't use it, if this is the only thing he hasn't lied about so far, if he doesn't use it, that's great. But I said earlier, again, who's it setting it up for?
And him saying that he wouldn't use it kind of goes along with, there's been multiple people who have been in prison by, you know, in short amounts of time. You have Bradley Manning, who was trying to give information to WikiLeaks about some of the stuff that the U.S. government's doing in other countries and how they're appropriating funds for basically a genocide in other countries, and how we're setting up a world government, America being the basically the king of all countries.
Right.
And then kind of to the smaller scale, there was a man named Brandon Robb in Virginia who was to the state, he was posting threatening material on his personal Facebook page, and they came to his house and they arrested him. They used the local sheriff's office, and they also had some FBI agents escort him off of his own property while his parents and his neighbors and all that were video recording it. They held him for, I believe, a few weeks, but before they would release him, they made him take a mandatory, forced psychological evaluation. So it kind of goes along right with that. They're figuring out who you are. They don't want you saying certain things about them. And if Obama's saying that he's not going to use it, maybe he didn't personally sign off on these things, but it's there to be used.
Well, and the case is that he did sign off on it. He knows it's in there. He knew it was in there, and he specifically said, you know, I signed the bill, but I made sure everybody knew that I wasn't going to use this, and yada yada. I mean, it just sounded like a whole load of shit to me when I was listening to this interview.
And it's one of those things. I hear a lot of people saying, too, that, you know, okay, that was the Alien Sedition Act. That got repealed. Yeah, it did in a way, but in 1978, they kind of signed a new thing called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And one of the funniest things about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is the last line of the bill that says this act shall not be used outside of the United States borders. So exactly how is it a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act if you can't use it anywhere outside of America?
Right. We were talking about this yesterday, basically how they don't hide any of this stuff.
No, not at all. Not at all. They put it out there, and it's basically they sell it as a safety feature for the mass of Americans who don't know any better. And it's one of those great quotes from Jefferson that if you value your safety over your freedom, you're not going to have either one of them. So
yeah.
But you know, it's one of those. It's just a whole long list of things that kind of came back to back that have made it to where anyone can be labeled an enemy of the state. And with the addition of the EEA onto all these other things, they now have the power to basically tell you you're not a citizen anymore.
Yeah, and just clarify this, that is to be determined if this is going to pass or not, but it's my understanding it's going to be sometime this month that we could be expatriated. And according to Representative Dent, who basically entered this into Congress on behalf of Lieberman and his crew in the House, he says, you know, this is only an extension of an already existing law that is deemed constitutional by the United States Supreme Court. So, I mean, that law may be constitutional. This one certainly doesn't sound like it. I mean, obviously, if you're declaring, hey, I'm a terrorist and I'm going to come into your country and blow you up, but I was born there and I'm a national, it makes sense, you know, just take his nationality away if he's out there declaring it. But if you're, like we're doing right now, just talking about, hey, you know, things need to change and we're stripped of our nationality, there's nothing protecting us now because the Constitution that used to protect our rights as an American doesn't apply to us anymore.
And one of the things I like to ask people is, okay, under the NDAA, they can tell who is a terrorist or not, but how do they figure those people out of 335+ million people in America? How do they know who's a terrorist and who's not? Well, that goes under FISA, because under FISA, in 1978, they allowed the wiretapping of any phone, the seizure of any form of communication, mail, your any kind of faxes, anything like that. They can literally take any of that and use it against you. But of course, FISA had a few restrictions to it too. The government had to have a court order. It had to say who they were looking at, what they were looking for, where they were going to be looking for it at, when they were going to be looking for it, and why. And it had to be oversighted by another federal agency. Say if the FBI was looking in somebody, they would have to use the CIA to oversight it to make sure that they were within their bounds of FISA 1978. Then the Patriot Act was signed. Patriot Act was really kind of an extension of FISA. The reason I say that is Patriot Act got rid of every one of those regulations. There was no more who, what, where, when, how, and why.
Yeah.
They didn't have to show what they were doing. They didn't have to show what they found. There was absolutely no oversight. And Bush Jr., George W. Bush, was actually accused and owned up to the fact that even before the Patriot Act was signed and took effect, he was wiretapping people's phones and creating databases of information in violation of FISA.
Yeah, I mean, I covered this earlier as well in the show, where in Section 215 of the Patriot Act, it specifically says that if the FBI wishes to obtain information regarding any individual pertaining to what they deem international terrorism or quote-unquote clandestine intelligence activities, so long as the reason isn't solely because of what the person speaks, which would be they have more than just what you're saying to back up their desire to gain all your information, they can get a hold of your books, records, papers, documents, and other items, which basically leaves it wide open.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things. Everyone thinks that they have this constitutional right to privacy, and they have the right to be secure in their belongings, which is in the Constitution, but they say it like this, that the bank that you use is a public place. More than one person gets to go there, so it's technically a public file that they're getting. The electric company is a public utility, so they can gain your file from the electric company to find out, you know, how much electricity you use, what your address is, how to cut your phone line. I mean, they can do all that because it's a public place. It's a public business that they're getting all this from. But with FISA, they could actually tap into your phone line and take personal phone calls. They could take your personal or your business faxes and use those against you.
Interesting. And that just kind of spawned a memory of mine. About 6 years ago, I was looking for custody of my daughter, and communications between her mother and I were over the internet for a lot of this. And my lawyer was telling me, save all those records. You don't even have to tell her that you're saving them because it's over the internet.
Yeah.
And you can just use it, and they don't have to consent to you storing that conversation and using it in court.
Yeah, because you're using a public domain to transfer for information, not a private line. And then, you know, I know you've touched on the NDAA a lot, and a lot of people don't go through and read these bills. Even the people who are signing off on these things don't go through them. I've actually read every word of NDAA 2012. I sat down, and it took me about 6.5 hours, but I have read every word of NDAA 2012. And NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act, and it's primarily just used as an appropriations bill to spend trillions upon trillions of dollars on various things for the government. It enables them to sell a lot of our assets over to other countries. We're selling drones and jets to South Korea. We're selling weapon systems to China. We're selling computer systems to Israel. We're selling microprocessors to different countries. It was an appropriations bill, and they just kind of snuck that part in there, Section 1021, that gives the United States the ability to detain individuals with military force. They can use the military to come into your home, kick in your door, and take you, and they don't have to say where you're going or where you are.
Or what you did wrong.
Well, exactly. There's no trial. There's no charges. They detain you. And what we've seen with Bradley Manning is he's been in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day, which I'm not saying doesn't happen in our prison system, but I don't exactly like our prison system either.
Yeah.
So they can torture you. They can waterboard you if they have to. They can send you to Guantanamo, and, you know, who knows what's going to take place there. And then the EEA comes out, you know, NDAA 2012 had the clause in there that you could indefinitely detain people. 2013 comes out, and a couple of senators, including Rand Paul, came out and said that we needed to add this clause, basically saying you cannot detain American citizens with this bill. So they approved that. They didn't want to detain American citizens. So the EEA has been forming here, and it's basically just saying, well, if they're an American citizen and we want to detain them, we'll just take away their citizenship.
Right.
It's that now they're not an American citizen. Now they're a person with no country, and now we can detain them. So it's that whole list of intrusions there that have really taken place since 1798 that have formed this monster of power here, that they can look at what you're doing, they can label you an enemy of the state, ostracize you, they can read into your personal conversations, they can use that against you to get warrants, to get whatever they need. Then, if they still can't do anything, the court still won't let them do anything, they'll just strip your citizenship away from you, and now you're fair game.
Yeah, and I just wanted to toss in here, for anybody listening who doesn't realize how scary that situation is for somebody, look up the stateless of Kuwait. These people were stripped of their nationality, stripped of their citizenship. This is years ago, and they're still fighting against it now. All of a sudden, you know, you'd get thrown out of your house, your whole family. You'd be homeless, kicked out of your house, wouldn't be allowed to attend the public school system, your children. You'd be fired from your job because now you didn't have any legal right to work in that state. And they were pretty much screwed. I haven't done enough research to know exactly what brought this on, but the fact of the matter is that it happened, and these people literally have no rights of any kind. They can't go anywhere else because they have no home now. So it's a very frightening concept.
And you know, the concept isn't new. We had this during World War II where we actually took not only Japanese descent individuals, but we put them into internment camps. We stripped them of their citizenship. We also took German descent, Dutch, French, African descent, and we placed them into camps all over the United States. And they were basically, it's kind of I feel like World War II in that time was kind of a getting ready for what we're having now, where you're having more and more Americans wake up and you're having them speak out against their government. It was just kind of the planning stage of what was going on, what's going to happen. And that kind of goes into the next topic, is of the FEMA camps that have been popping up all over the United States. There is reports of around 800 of these FEMA camps that have been set up in the United States. Most of them have been with ex-military bases and I guess you could call them asylums.
Yeah.
And hospitals, things like that. They've taken these and they've refurbed them into a base for kind of just keeping people, you know?
Well, I think the official name of them, if I'm not mistaken, is Public Relief Center or something similar to that, where it doesn't sound so scary. But then you start looking at what's around. I know Jesse Ventura had a program called Conspiracy Theory. Yeah. And he did a program on that where they aired it one time and never again. It'll never be shown as a rerun. And he basically went up to one of these places and he noticed that there was, you know, 15-foot high fence with barbed wire at the top. And the barbed wire was pointed inward. It was angled in at like a 45-degree angle. Just like a maximum security prison. And he was talking to one of the representatives of the place, and there were people there. They came out and they talked with him, and he said, you know, why is the barbed wire pointed in? That looks more like a prison to me. If you're trying to keep people out, because they claimed that they were trying to keep the people inside safe. That was their duty. He said, well, if you're trying to keep people out, you'd want to angle the barbed wire outward so people couldn't climb over and jump over the wire. If you angle it in, that's just like a prison to keep people from getting out. And on the outside sign, when you're walking into the place, it said you couldn't bring in anything that could be used by anyone inside to escape. And it used like the word escape.
And another thing that people aren't really paying attention to is all of the executive orders. It's not just President Obama that's been signing these things, but it gives the federal government an exuberant amount of power over pretty much everything. You go to, they have the power to take over all modes of transportation and the control of highways and seaports. They can control the media, every bit of, every type of media they can control it, which in some cases they already do, but they can take over all the electrical grids, every bit of fuel that's being used for any kind of power. They can take over the food system, the farms. They can create work brigades under government supervision. They have the ability to take over the health, education, and welfare functions, which they've had that for a long time. In Executive Order 11002, the President designated the Postmaster General to operate a national registration of all persons living in the borders of the United States of America. That's kind of scary in the fact that they actually have a list of every single person, where they live. It's basically, it's the census, basically what it is. And, you know, I've always kind of been leery about census takers anyway, because they're creating a list of people that live in your household that the government really doesn't need to know about anyway. If I want to have 15 people living in my house, I have the right to have 15 people living in my house. There's a lot of stuff in here that the executive orders have given power to FEMA to basically just take possession of a base or any urban center that they need and turn it into a relocation camp for American citizens.
Well, on the note of FEMA camps as well, in that same documentary of Ventura's conspiracy theory, I hate to keep going back to that one thing. There's multiple instances of this being taken down, but it's the most obvious and most easily accessed information. He basically he went up to the White House and he talked with one of the congressmen that signed his name to the bill that allowed the creation of these FEMA centers, relief centers, and the guy acted like he didn't recall anything about it at first, and then Ventura's like, well, you know, it says in here, it doesn't really specify what these things are for. It just says that their use is to be determined by the director of the Department of Homeland Security. So there's no actual reason that they exist officially. They're just there waiting for the director of the Department of Homeland Security to decide what they're going to be used for. And correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm under the impression, and I've said this to many people, that in order to sign an executive order, the President of the United States must first basically make the Constitution null and void. He has to somehow, however they do it, nullify the Constitution, sign the executive order, and then reinstate the Constitution after that. You think I would be correct in saying that or not?
I really have never heard that before. It's a very interesting topic for me to look into, but I've actually never heard that one before.
Well, the reason I say that is back when Abraham Lincoln, who signed the very first executive order in our history, which basically cut off all the supplies for the South, it's somewhere in there. It stuck with me for some reason, and I'd have to look it up again, but it's somewhere in there. It was a very shocking moment because at that time, the Constitution was nullified because it was an unconstitutional thing that he was doing. So in order to do that, he had to make sure that the Constitution couldn't see it.
Like I said, I've never heard that before, and I've never read anything into that, but that is a very interesting topic for me to look into. The only thing I do know is the executive orders have been around since 1785. There's absolutely no constitutional statute that permits an executive order, but they have kind of just taken it upon themselves to continue doing it. So there is no constitutional basis for having the executive orders out there. They just continue on with them because I guess the last president did it. They're never good. There's never been a beneficial executive order, in my opinion. They usually have some way of just saying, oh, well, I can't get this passed in the Senate. I can't get this passed in the House. Oh, well, I'll just sign it myself, and there we go. That's just kind of a way to get around the steps of getting a bill or a law enacted.
Yeah, and that's another thing that kind of leads me to that conclusion is it's something where they either don't want to go through the standard process to get something passed, or they simply know that it will never pass in a million years if put up for a vote.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems. We've allowed it. That's one of my my biggest irks with society at this point right now is that we allow this. We can sit and we can complain about it, but when it comes time to vote, we allow these same people in there that have voted this way. And, you know, I'm from Florida, and we have probably some of the, in my opinion, the worst representation that you can possibly get. We got a governor who, you know, wants to support Obamacare if he can, yet he ran on a campaign of, you know, we need to nullify Obamacare if it comes down to it. And then we have a couple of senators that are completely on the same page, even though they're from different parties, and our House reps aren't doing any better. So it's one of those things. We allow this to take place, and that's, you know, we as Americans need to stand up and demand that we have better representation.
Yeah, how silly do we look at this point, do you think, to the government where the people literally beg them to do certain things for years and years and years, they finally give it to us, and then we protest about it? How stupid do we seem? I mean, it's got to be ridiculously laughable in the White House.
You know, it goes back to kind of the, you know, I take part in the In the Fed rallies here in Duval County, and it's one of those things, you know, the Federal Reserve has been around for now since 1913. Now it's been 100 years, and we're just now learning the evils of what they do, and we're learning what is actually taking place in there, but yet we've allowed it for so long. I mean, I put myself in the category, I was completely oblivious to the way government worked until 2008, and I mean, I know a lot of people will probably say it's that awakening from Ron Paul, and you know, it kind of was. I mean, if you listen to the guy's words, and you don't just listen to him, you kind of take a hint to go read it yourself. Kind of gives you the directions just to study it for yourself and make your own conclusions. And when I studied it, I came up with the conclusion that, yeah, these guys are bad. We need to end these guys. And there's a lot of people out there with me. There's obviously not enough of us. Otherwise, the Federal Reserve wouldn't still be in power. So,
well, the thing about Ron Paul, and I'm the same exact way you were. Up until 2008, I couldn't care less about politics. I didn't even care who got into the presidency because, in my view, every single one of them was lying through their teeth at all times. Nobody would do anything differently than the last guy, no matter what he said, running. So I just didn't even pay attention to it. I said, there's no point in voting because they're all exactly the same. And then I see Ron Paul up there during the nomination debates for the Republican Party. And I'm sitting in my chair watching this, and I'm literally flabbergasted because here's a guy who is a politician, has been there, has been a politician longer than I've been alive, saying the things that I've been saying to people for a while, that both parties are the same, you're going to get the same thing unless you vote, you know, your conscience and with the Constitution. Nothing's ever going to change from one administration to the next, regardless of who gets in. And it's just like everything that he said was just like, and I don't want to be corny here, but it's just so beautiful to hear somebody say that.
It really is. He has a very eloquent way of saying that we've created a monster, and you know, and now it's our turn to stop this monster. He has a very unique way of saying it, in a way that I think that the younger generations get it. The older generations are kind of still stuck in their ways. They still, you know, say that Reagan was one of the best presidents out there, which, in a lot of ways, if you say that he was one of the best, you're kind of putting him up there in the top 10. I'll give you that. But I don't agree with Reagan being the best ever. I don't think we've ever had the best ever, you know, president that we can have. So, and I'm holding out on that. I really am. I do think that someone soon will come along that can really honestly change something and change the way that we're living our lives. And until that time comes, I mean, we're not going to stop fighting for what we believe in. So,
well, I think we had one guy just for a very short time named John F. Kennedy. And obviously he was taken from the presidency a little bit earlier than he should have been.
And, you know, I didn't grow up. I was actually born in 83, so I didn't really get the full effect of Reagan at all. But I really, honestly, I didn't even start looking into politics whatsoever until, you know, 2007, 2008. I mean, I'm one of those sheep that voted for Bush, you know, the second time because, hey, we're taking care of a war that, you know, we kind of started ourselves. So,
yeah. Oh, you don't want to change presidents now in the middle of a war, do you? Well.
And honestly, I mean, who was running against Bush at the time? We had Al Gore. Yeah, I think I'd stick with Bush, actually, on that one.
The lesser of two evils is still an evil, and no matter which way you want to look at it. The first time I ever voted was for Bush Sr. And I'm going to age myself here. I was born in 80. So not long ago. So I didn't actually experience Reagan. I just kind of second-handedly saw what he was about. But I voted for Bush Sr. And I had to do it because it was a school project. For all the seniors in class, we had to, you know, do research on the candidates. I don't even know who in the world he was going against anymore. And the only reason I voted for this guy was his last name. I thought it was hilarious that his name was Bush. You know, yeah. I'm a high school kid, Bush, you know, you can connect the dots all you want. And I never voted since because I realized soon after that it didn't matter what they said. They were going to do whatever the hell they were going to do once they got into office anyway.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do is show people that these elections really do affect your life, and that if you don't take an interest in what they're doing, it doesn't mean they're not taking an interest in what you're doing. They are affecting your life every single day, and you need to pay attention to this because sooner or later, you're going to get pissed off to where, why are they taking 30% of my paycheck? Well, you didn't say anything about it when we took 20. Why are you taking 40% of my paycheck? Well, you didn't say anything about it when we took 30. So it's, you know, I was talking to a coworker at work the other day, and she said that politics doesn't affect her life. Very next day, she starts talking about they're taking the 2% of her paycheck out. I'm like, does it affect you now? I guess you should have paid attention when they were talking about it the first time. I guess you should have been like me and called your senators and your representatives and say, hey, do not vote on this. Just vote no. You don't know what's in it. You're never going to know what's in it. Just vote no on it. And look, one of our senators did.
A lot of people don't do that. I do it myself now that I'm kind of involved in this stuff. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't know that. Look, these guys work for you. You know, they're in office because your area voted them in or your state voted them in. If you call them up and say, look, I don't want you to vote yes on this thing, this is going to piss me off, and a lot of other people do the same thing, they're going to realize that if they vote yes on this thing, that some people are paying attention and they might not get another term. And that's their livelihood. That's the whole idea here, is to get another term.
And, you know, it really, just like everything else, it falls back to the people. The people have to be informed, and they have to be the irate minority, really, to really get things done. I mean, you have to pay attention to what's going on because it truly does affect you, right? You know, I hear all the time, well, gas prices are so high, the president should do something about that. Dude, the president really doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, you really got to talk to the people, the OPEC, the people who control the oil supply. I mean, if you really want to change something, you got to talk to them. The president can release a few million barrels from the strategic oil reserve, but that's not really going to drive prices down. And you try to get through to them with, the basis of capitalism versus socialism. And some of them hear it, some of them don't. I had an experience on Friday where a co-worker of mine, we were talking about how, the Federal Reserve causes the inflation and how your dollar isn't buying as much. It's not that the prices are going up, but your dollar is less. And it clicked with him, I saw his eyes light up, I saw his mind wrap around the idea that it's not the prices, it's the money, it's not the result of it, it's the problem. So I'm hopefully getting through to that one person every week that I can really change their perception on what's going on.
Yeah, and I applaud you for that. I get through to very few people, individuals around my play, my area. Most people around here are lower to middle class. Don't really have too many worries, and that my neighbors have Jaguars sitting in their driveway. They're not worried about anything. So it's getting through these people that something is terribly going on here, and you need to think more outside of your own little bubble is rather difficult sometimes. But if, like you said, if you can just reach that one person, that may start a chain of events that one person convinces two other people, and those two people convince two others.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was at the other day. And I think I just posted something on Twitter that said the same thing. Those people that you wake up today are going to turn around and they're going to wake up somebody tomorrow, and that's what you want. You want the chain to start. You want to implant that seed into their mind, let them come up with their own ending to that. You want them to educate themselves. You don't want to sit there and preach at them and yell at them and scream at them and in some cases strangle them. You really want to get them to just pick up a book, watch a video, do something to educate themselves. And it's stuff just like we're talking about with the NDAA, the EEA. People have no idea what is in those because they don't read them. They don't know what's going on because they don't care. It's a severe case of apathy nationwide that is ruining this country. And I really, honestly, you're talking about the Enemy Expatriation Act, which is a forced expatriation. For a while there, before this election, I was looking for a willingly expatriation. We're looking into countries that we could go in the case of a economic collapse that we feel is coming. And honestly, it's still not a bad idea because we still feel like it's coming. And so if they're going to force me to be expatriated and hold me in some detention center somewhere in America or somewhere else, that's what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. But if I can get the hell out of Dodge before that happens, that's kind of where, I'm at. I love my country. I mean, my family has fought and died for this country, but comes to a point where you just have to sometimes just say, enough is enough. I've got to be able to survive as long as I can, too.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to an article I read very recently, just a few days back, very eloquent author. He basically said, how can we avoid the concentration camps of the United States, basically the FEMA camps? How do you avoid that? And he went down the whole process of, what is a concentration camp? What are these FEMA camps and why are they concentration camps? Yada, yada, yada. And he said all throughout history, he said, I'm a history teacher. I've brought in people who survived the Holocaust to my classroom and had them speak. He said in 10 out of 10 cases, they'll tell you that when you get inside these concentration camps, it's 100% luck if you survive or not. He said most of them, they were going down the line, shuffling people off to the showers where they gassed them. And one of them, they said 9 out of 10, the people would say, well, I was the next in line and they met their quota right before me. That's the only reason I'm alive today. And he said his conclusion was, if you want to survive a concentration camp, don't get caught. That's the only way.
Like I was saying, we found ways to get out of this country, but we've also found ways to stay in the country, just not be part of the mass of society, you know, along with all the other people. There are ways to be able to survive on your own, and, you know, we've looked into every one of those, and implementing some of the ideas of just basically people on the run without actually being on the run yet.
Yeah. It's being kind of self-sufficient, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, we kind of do that anyway because, you know, we were looking for our first home here beginning of last year. We just actually moved into our first home, and we were looking for a place that ran off of a well instead of running off of city water because fluoride. We both actively do not like fluoride. We think it's bad. You know, there's multiple studies there, and things have been found that it lowers, you know, brain cells, it causes cancers, it does stuff like that. And so we actively looked for a place that did not run off of a city water system. We run off of our well. We looked for a place big enough so that we could have a garden and have some kind of meat-producing animals, rabbits or chickens or whatever. Yeah. And we found that. And that's what we're doing now is, you know, we're in the process of building those things. We've got the garden going. We've got the chicken coop, the rabbit hutch. We've got things like that now so that if something happens, I don't need to leave this spot where I'm at to be able to survive.
My biggest thing right now is what a lot of people kind of overlook. You know, we're all wrapped up in all this stuff that's going on. My focus is on making sure my daughter, who's 6 now, is awake her entire life. She doesn't have to go through the process of figuring things out, having that, oh my God moment. What the hell's going on? You know, in my house, we don't have television service. We obviously have internet service. We don't watch TV. And I recall having a conversation with one of the other parents at the bus stop, and I happened to mention to her that we don't have TV service. She's like, well, what do you do? What does she do when she's home? I'm like, what do you mean? We do crafts. We play. We make stuff. We might watch a video on the internet or something every once in a while. But we're not sitting there staring at freaking Honey Boo Boo and all that other garbage they have on television nowadays.
Things that are rotting your mind. And, you know, like I said, I grew up in the early 80s. I'm the Nintendo kid. I had the regular Nintendo. I had the Super Nintendo. I've had everything past that. And I truly feel like that the problems of society right now, they're not based on the video games, so to speak, but they're based on those kids, just like myself, sat in our rooms or in our homes for 20 hours a day on a good summer day, and we sat there and we stared at a screen, hitting a couple buttons, killing other things on the screen. Instead of being outside, being in nature, and, you know, reading a book, or going to the library, going to the museum, doing something like that, and it's kind of a diseducation or a miseducation in priorities. And I think the youth of America needs to really wake up and relearn those things, to get rid of the cell phones, to get rid of the telephones. I use texting. I use my Twitter, I use my Facebook, but that's kind of, I'm keeping connected to people who are in the same circles that I'm in. And we try to communicate ideas to each other to get more people involved and to get more people educated on what's going on. And that's, I feel like that the technology that's out there right now can be used for good, but in the broader sense right now, it's being used to kind of dull the senses, to melt the mind, to basically cause more apathy and to just make people where they don't care. They don't care if they can't afford to buy their own house. They got the brand new iPhone 17. They don't care that their, you know, it takes them $40 to buy a loaf of bread. They have the brand new, you know, PS27. They just don't care because they have technology. But when technology gets shut down and they can't grow a freaking peanut from anything, they'll die. I truly believe that that's where we're headed to, is where if the government decides that they want to flip the switch and we're all back in the dark ages, so be it, because I'm prepared. I'm ready for it. You know, I see it coming anyway. So, guess what? I've got a lot of candles around my house. I can keep my house lit. See somebody walking down the street and they see a lit house, they're probably going to come up there. Well, I've got things to take care of people coming up to my house.
Yeah, and you keep this in mind, everybody listening right now. If you can't give to society what society needs in a shit hits the fan scenario, if you can't medicinally help people, if you can't grow crop, if feed people, if you can't build anything, you might as well not exist. You're not going to help any group that you join, and they're not going to take you. Because if you can't pull your weight, you're dead weight. Keep that in mind.
You're just another mouth.
Yeah, keep it in mind. I mean, you're just like a child who can't do anything, a newborn who can't do anything for themselves and have to be taken care of by everybody else. Keep that in mind, because when it comes, and I believe it will come at some point, I'm sure that at least some major cities are going to be completely shut down. If a major catastrophe happens, it might even be a false flag operation to begin a civil war. Who knows what the hell it's going to be, but when the lights go out and you've got to fend for yourself and you've got to get into groups to survive, if you can't do these things, you're not going to survive because nobody's going to want you in their group.
My wife came up with this scenario. Actually, it was this morning, and said she truly feels like they're trying to make us revolt. They're pushing every button that they feel they need to make the citizens rise up against the government so that they have a reason to use everything that they've been putting in place for so many years. And it kind of hit me. I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. They're destroying our money so that they have to take care of us. And then when everyone's completely relied on them, guess what? They're not going to be able to provide for us, so we have to now go against our government. Well, they've already set in place the plans to get rid of us before we can even do that. So it's kind of one of those other theories that they're doing all of this just so that we can rise up against them. And they put in place all the plans to take care of that.
It's actually a rather interesting concept. Makes sense. I mean, it really does when you boil it down. So, I really appreciate you being on the program. I think we'll wrap it up now. We've covered just about everything I can possibly imagine. Really appreciate you being on the show. Travis Wilson at Patriot Papers on Twitter. Just take some time, plug whatever you want.
Yeah, you can catch me on, you know, like you said, at Twitter at Patriot Papers. You can also catch my blog at thejeffersonpapers.blogspot.com. And also we run a video chat room, a live video chat room on goldwater1964.com. It's got a forum on there. You can post articles, you can post opinions. We've got the video chat. You can link it into your Twitter also at goldwater1964. And I appreciate you letting me come on here and speak.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Travis, and hopefully we'll have you on some other time. We have something to talk about again. So that's it for me, this episode of Don't Listen to This Show, installment number 2, and very much appreciate everybody for tuning in. Check us out in a couple weeks' time for episode number 3, and want to quickly give a shout-out here to Nimrod the Lamanite from Outer Darkness Podcast. Without his help, this show would have never gotten off at all. Check him out at Sweep the Lego on Twitter, also at Outer Darkness on Twitter for Outer Darkness Podcast, www.outerdarknesspodcast.com. We'll see you in a couple weeks, and once again, I'm going to leave you here with a little bit of George Carlin.
I really haven't seen this many people in one place since they took the group photographs of all the criminals and lawbreakers in the Ronald Reagan administration. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. 225 of them so far. 225 different people in the Ronald Reagan administration have either quit, been fired, been arrested, indicted, or convicted of either breaking the law or violating the ethics code. 225 of them. And Edwin Meese alone has been investigated by 3 separate special prosecutors, and there's a 4th one waiting for him in Washington right now. 3 separate special prosecutors have had to look into the activities of the Attorney General, and the Attorney General is the nation's leading law enforcement officer. See, that's what you got to remember. This is the Ronald Reagan administration we're talking about. These are the law and order people. These are the people who are against street crime. They want to put street criminals in jail to make life safer for the business criminals. They're against street crime. Yeah. Yeah, they're against street crime, providing that street isn't Wall Street. And the Supreme Court decided about a year ago that it's all right to put people in jail now if we just think they're going to commit a crime. It's called preventive detention. All you got to do now is just think they're going to commit a crime. Well, if we'd have known this shit 7 or 8 years ago, we could have put a bunch of these Republican motherfuckers directly into prison. Yeah. Put them in the joint where they belong, and we could have saved the money of putting these country club pin-headed assholes on trial. Another thing you got to remember, this is the group of people who were elected with the help of the moral majority. Elected with the help of the moral majority and the Teamsters Union. That's a good combination. Organized religion and organized crime working together to help build a better America.